Welcome to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for micropreneurs building genuine, lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. I'm your host, Candice Ridardi. If you love eavesdropping on conversations between grateful entrepreneurs who are making this world a better place, be sure to subscribe, share, and leave your groovy review. The world is hurting right now. We need to spread gratitude, kindness, and love more than ever before. That's why this week we are revisiting our conversation with Hibby Bartlett, founder of World Love Bank. Episode 127, All You Need is Love. Welcome to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast, helping micropreneurs find your micro-influencer magic. I'm your host, Candice Ridardi, and this week I'm joined by wellness advocate Hibby Bartlett. Hibby is the founder of World Love Bank, a new health and wellness app designed to build and secure emotional health via positive messages from loved ones. Her mission is to provide people from all walks of life the opportunity to feel valued, accepted, and most importantly, loved. Welcome, Hibby.
Well, thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
It's going to be fun. I have been playing with your app.
As you should.
Okay. So before we talk about your app, tell us your unique story. How'd you get to where you are?
Well, I'm very grateful to be where I am today, but everything is a journey. Where I am today is I'm from South Africa, Cape Town, South Africa. My father is Arabic English. My mother is German, Malaysian, and part Bushman. And so when we transferred to Canada, my parents just said, you know, we're a very tight-knit family. And they said, you know, just accept everyone the same because we're so mixed. And he said, you know, my father said, follow the Ten Commandments and you're going to be okay. Like as you do as best you can. And growing up in Canada, that's what we were taught. And it's just a big melting pot. And I always thought, because that was the way I grew up, that everyone was the same. I just knew that. My mom just said, you know, everyone's blood is red. You know, and I was like, okay, you know, it was just that way, but fitting in is always a little difficult. And what happened was, we moved as a family and it was myself and my four other siblings. So my oldest brother was about 13 when he came here to Canada. And so I think the transition was a lot harder for him. And so what had happened is, as he was going through high school and going into, you know, the world as a young adult, he got mixed up in with, like, you know, drugs and alcohol abuse. And in the end, he ended up suffering from addictions. And what had happened was we were very close. We're 10 years apart, but we're very close. The last time I actually spoke to him, he'd called my mom's house and I picked up the phone and I knew he was struggling. And I was, you know, we had our little chat and stuff and I hadn't seen him for a while. And I said, you know, I love you. And he's like, no, you don't. And I think that's really what happens. A lot of people can't accept love or they carry a lot of guilt and shame and they can't connect. And so I said, no, I love you. He's like, no, you don't. And then being the little sister, I kept saying, I love you. I love you. I love you. And I remember saying it 15 times until finally he said, I love you back. However, 3 months later, he ended up dying and he left behind his 3-year-old son who would never hear those words. And that to me was, even though it helped me with my grief, knowing intentionally that I had said that I would never hear his voice again, that stayed with me. And so where I am today is, I went through my own struggles. And when I decided to just, well, it wasn't a decision. You just keep practicing things until they become habits, and habits of gratitude, habits of appreciation, habits of, like, optimism. I came to a point where I was like, you know, I know this world is a loving place. I just can't do it on my own. And I'd gotten the opportunities to do great things, like going to El Salvador to orphanages and all these things. And I remembered my brother and I remembered how important it was. And I also remembered the gap that was left for my nephew. And I said, I'm going to build a bank where anyone, anywhere can hear love any time of the day. And it wouldn't have to be just from someone that they knew, but it would be anonymous so that it could be, you know, like I said to my brother, I love you, I love you, I love you. Like, just to have that opportunity to have that impressed upon them so that that was valued, but as well have that one safe place where people intentionally leave words of encouragement and words of love to those they care about most. I came to the realization, and it's a gift, that life is temporary, but love is forever. So if we can bank that, that's our emotional wealth that we can carry. So we don't have to worry about, you know, leaving these large sums of money for our family, if we've left them love, then we've done a good job. And that's where I am today.
Oh.
Long one there. You're like,
As you're sharing your story, my mom had, she died from leukemia about 12 years ago. And on her laptop, I found videos that she had taken of herself. She's not really talking in them. She's just taking videos of herself. And she was playing. Obviously she's sitting in her hospital bed, and she's in the hospital. It's obvious she's in the hospital in these videos, but she's playing with the video features and making cute little videos with little hearts in the background and everything. And let me tell you, and they're short. They're really short. They're 15 seconds, and she doesn't look like mom. It's so sick at that point that she didn't look like herself anymore, but still her personality was there. So every once in a while, it's just really nice to watch one of those videos. They're short and sweet, and you know, I posted a couple of them to Facebook. And so, you know, your Facebook memories pop up and there's your mom, and it's just really, it's nice. So I completely understand this. And what a treat or a gift. Imagine that you know that you are going to die because you have some sort of illness that is going to kill you in the next, you know, year. What a gift to leave a bank of messages, of love messages to your loved ones, and to have a place where they're going to live and anybody anytime can listen to them that loves
you. Exactly. 100%.
What a gift. Wow.
Well, the funny thing is, like what you said is true, but it's like you're building your own bank. So you can actually leave messages for other people, but it's in folders. So you get to save them in your private savings account. Right. But when you get into the app, there's also features where you can leave audio, you can leave video, but you can also port them into the future. So I know I'm going to be here. I'm not sick. Everything's good. And if everything rolls along as it should, I should be here for a good few years, but that doesn't say that I might not get into a car accident. Or something might happen, like, you know, tragically, you know, people die every day from unplanned accidents. I can port messages into the future for like milestones for my son's 21st, 30th, 40th birthday, and they'll just be held in my account and released to his account on those days I chose.
My mind is blown.
Well, and happy birthday too, because I lost my mom, and I'm sorry to hear that you lost your mom. And she sounded like a lovely woman. I mean, those spiritual like energies are always there, regardless of how they look on the outside, because the voice, and you know, the sound of mom, right? You can actually leave legacies, and happy birthdays, I think, are so important, because when my mom passed, she passed in August of 2020. I still have her saying Merry Christmas. And it's just her with her little kind of melody type tone. And, you know, I didn't get the happy birthday, but I wanted it so bad. And I realize now, like, be intentional. Those, like, because now I can hear, if I had it, I could hear her say, I love, or happy birthday, and sing me my happy birthday song every single year. Just boom. And if she'd sent them separately, I would have had like 7 or 8 or how many she managed to send popping up on my birthday. Like, hey, it's mom again. Happy birthday.
Wow. Wow. What a gift. How did you get this idea? Divine inspiration?
Well, like I said, exactly. Well, when you get to the point where, like, it was one of those things where I was going through a struggle, and I was like, I really do. Like, if you'll get to know me, I love people. I really do. And that's what my parents had always kind of instilled in me. And I always looked at giving people the benefit of the doubt. So when my brother had passed, and then, you know, just watching the struggles the world was going through, I was like, you know, this world is still a loving place and people need to know it. But sometimes people aren't in those healthy relationships where they can access it that easily, or, you know, they haven't heard it enough to be able to share it, because that's what happens, is habits are formed by the information we put in and then turn around and give back out. So I was like, if I could help put that message in to people, you know, that's going to help them to be familiar with saying the words, I love you, to be familiar with hearing words of encouragement. And then they can not only be kinder to themselves, but to be kind to other people. And I just came up with it. I just was like, it just made sense, like literally sense, that why would we not have a bank that was filled with love? If we always say love is our most valuable asset, love is more valuable than money. Love is the only thing you can take with you. You can't take any of this material stuff with you, but this love is what we need. And I was like, I'm building a bank, but I didn't know how I was going to do it. And I'll just say one more thing. If we never try something new and believe in our dreams, like we'll always be waiting for someone else to finish our story. Who would have thought that we'd be buying bottled water? Like we were like, it's just in our tap, but the convenience of it, that's what I want people to remember is love is to be used and intentional. And if you use it in the app, you're going to use it in the world. It's just an avenue, a little nudge for us to stay connected.
I wish we'd buy less bottled water.
Of course. But I'm telling you, it's glass, it's pin cups, it's everywhere.
I have these two empty bottles of water. We went to Pride Festival last weekend and we were thirsty, so we bought bottles of water. And I can't throw these bottles away because I feel guilty about them. So I've been refilling them, keeping them on my desk. I've had them for a week now. I think it's probably time to recycle them. It makes me feel guilty to have plastic bottles.
You know what? That's what I do. Like, it's almost natural. Like if I'm going to buy a bottle, like, if, you know, if I'm in a situation where I need to like, oh, I need, you know, a bottled water, I'll buy one, but then I'm always refilling it and keeping it in my car. Like, you know, cause then I don't have to buy another one. I'm just makes sense.
Same way with styrofoam. I will reuse a styrofoam cup from a convenience store, or, you know, if I get fast food or something, I'll reuse that cup until it can't be reused anymore.
Oh my gosh. I haven't even seen styrofoam. Are you serious?
Like, well, you're in Canada. You've probably made it illegal. Here in the US, you know, we don't make anything illegal.
Oh, well, that's a different topic, but yeah.
You know, it's so strange because Canada is literally just 2 hours away from me. I'm in Michigan and, you know, there are parts of Michigan where you can work in Canada and live in Michigan or work in Michigan and live in Canada. I mean, not in the last 2 years, but you know, it's just, right. But the culture, our cultures are so different, you know, and we share a border.
So do you come to Canada very often?
I have never in my entire life been to Canada.
What?
I know.
I know. Feel different. Just it's like when I go to the States and I cross the border, I know I'm in America. But when I come, you know, and when you're in Canada, it just, I can't explain it. Like, I just think it's kind of hokey, but yeah, I think people are pretty damn nice, darn nice out here. Mm-hmm. Listen to me. I couldn't even say the word damn. See? But that's the thing too, is that everyone has a bad day. Mm-hmm. And everyone's entitled to a bad day. It's just, you know, the level of how bad it gets is, you know, we want to kind of minimize that for people. We want people to be like, you know, I'm having a bad day, but there's always tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You know, like that person was really mean to me, but maybe their day's worse. Like I try to form things in my mind to always help me to be more patient. Like there are two things I can suggest. One, and these are things that happen every day. So one, you're driving behind a really slow driver, right? And you want to speed. So what do I think? I think, you know what? That bugger, he must have got a ticket yesterday. And he's just, you know, so I feel bad because he's probably sitting on like a $150 ticket and, you know, and he's driving super slow. So I'll just go around him because I know how I'd feel the next day after getting a ticket, right? We kind of be relatable. Right. So I just feel bad. No, you know, don't feel bad, but it's like, okay, give them the benefit of the doubt, go on, or a new driver. Don't want to stress them out. Another one is I know that when an ambulance comes, people get very frustrated in Canada. When an ambulance is coming down, we all shift to the right. Right. And people like shift more, some people shift less, but we get out of the way. And it can be, you know, difficult when people start to merge again. But I always think, I'm so grateful that I'm not that person in the ambulance that has to go to the hospital or that ambulance needs to go and save somebody's life. And that person's life will change forever as among all their family as well. So I just, you know, it's that level of thinking about the benefit of where we are and just being like, I'm okay where I am. You can go ahead.
Well, you can also think if I was in America, I'd have to pay for that ambulance, but here I wouldn't have to.
Well, this is true. This is true. Like, well, yeah, you could be in the ambulance going, I'm so grateful that I'm just in this ambulance. And it's not going to cost me, you know, like $1 million. I mean, there's always ways to reframe it.
One ambulance ride in the US for an uninsured person could bankrupt them. I mean,
oh my gosh.
It's horrible.
Thank goodness they'll have the love bank because yeah, they won't be
exactly
bankrupt.
Exactly. I love the way you look at life. And you've obviously never been to Michigan because we speed limits are optional here.
Okay.
I swear there are times I'm on the freeway. I look down, and I'm going 95 or 100 miles an hour, and I'm going the same speed as every other car on the highway. I have never lived in a place that drives this fast. It's fun. Oh, it's fun. Yeah.
But when you hit something, you're hit it hard.
Yeah.
Right.
But everybody else is going the same speed.
We do that.
So, yeah.
There is the speed of traffic, but I think even when, you know, kilometers versus miles, like ours are always going to be, you know, we're always kind of being lagging behind the American way. Right. I did go to Pennsylvania and I was very surprised that helmets are optional for motorcycles.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So the one time I was, I had only been visiting friends and I just happened to get offered a ride from my friend's friends. They're like, we'll pick you up. We'll take you to the train station. No problem. They picked me up. I had a helmet. They didn't have helmets because they were out riding. And so I was on the back of one motorcycle and there was another motorcycle in front. And sure enough, he gets into an accident right in front of us. And, you know, punctured lung, his head had hit the sidewalk. He survived. Thank goodness. But I'm telling you, you know, a lot more blood spills without helmets.
Helmets were mandatory until, I don't know, the last 20 years. In the last 20 years, that law was repealed. I don't know why you repeal a health and safety law. I can't imagine repealing the seatbelt law. It doesn't make any sense at all. But, you know, politicians sometimes get convinced that the lobbyists are telling them the truth. Just saying.
Well, and the thing is, that's the difference too, is that you can have a law that says, you know, you're allowed to not wear a helmet or but you still have to know that it's unsafe. Like, honestly, when I fought the idea of wearing a seatbelt at the beginning, because I grew up without seatbelts, they were there. They only went across your lap, of course, but you know, it was optional or you just didn't do it. But at first it was like, oh, this is such a pain. It's wrinkling my clothes. It's uncomfortable. But now I would never get in my car without a seatbelt.
You must be older than you look because I was like 16 when that seatbelt law went into effect.
Do we really want to do this on air?
No.
Girl, we'll talk about it afterwards. But yes,
I do remember it being kind of weird at first, but then it didn't take very long for it to feel natural. Like I felt naked without a seatbelt within 6 months. Just,
yeah,
you know, but yeah, so that's one of the reasons why in Michigan we can drive 100 miles an hour because we feel safe behind our seatbelts.
Well, there's always got to be something in between that space, right? Oh my goodness. Yeah.
No, I've never lived in a place where I actually had to be conscious that I wasn't driving too fast because all the other cars were driving too fast, you know?
Right. Well, yeah, no, you definitely, that would be the one thing you'd be like, geez, these Canadians, they drive real slow.
Do you?
Like you would, no, we don't. But if you're doing 100 and plus an hour, you'll be coming across the board and everything will stop and be like,
it's because all the other cars are driving that fast too. You know, if you're driving in the car, you naturally want to go the same speed everybody else is going, unless the person in front of you is a tractor and you need to get around. Well,
there
them,
you but, go.
Yeah. So,
and that's how life is though, right? We kind of go with the flow. We're kind of trained that way. And that's why, again, going back to, you know, World Love Bank. And it's like, it's just practicing things like that, right? Because I used to, and I still do, I'd have these big signs that say, I love you, everything's going to be okay. And if I'm having a bad day, I'll go stand. I'll see you go by real fast. But I'd be standing there holding the signs and I'm not asking for money. I'm just sharing a message. And people are real, you know, it's like that influx of people. They they appreciate it. And even if someone doesn't, it's that idea that they're going to think, ooh, who is that crazy lady with the I love you sign? And what, you know, it still affects people. And then possibly they might just consider on that day saying, I love you to someone. And if they were to consider it that day, maybe the next day, if they were to see another sign or get another opportunity to see random people sharing love, it would just be like, okay, the more people see it, they'll go with the flow. So
it's why I love your app, because it's very difficult in today's age to hear messages of love because we're not used to it. I mean, we've just become this detached society. I think you have the word detached somewhere. I read that somewhere on something that you wrote. And it is so true. We do. We're super detached. We hardly ever say the words I love. We hardly ever say anything kind to each other. I mean, I'm on a mission this year to send 1,000 birthday cards because nobody ever gets celebrated anymore. I'm only halfway there though. I have about 550 birthdays for the year. I need 450 more. So if you'd like me to send your birthday card, listener, I have a link in the show notes where you can add your address and your date of birth, and I will send you a birthday card on your birthday. So having your app and allowing yourself to hear those messages is just as important as leaving the messages. Because you got to be open to hearing them too. Like your brother wasn't open to hearing the message. And
see, I think what in life, and I guess, you know, as we, you know, are in relationships that maybe aren't healthy or we're just disconnected, COVID, we don't get those opportunities as much to hear it, say it. People are very closed off, I think. Not everyone. I know there's lots of loving people out there, but you know, for those who aren't used to it, it's to like my brother, he knew I loved him, but I think to hear it out loud is different. And then we all carry, you know, we're our worst critics, so we can carry shame or guilt of things. And to believe it is hard. To believe like, oh my gosh, I am lovable. I am enough. So you hear people struggling with those words a lot. And to know that you've got a place where, oh, you know, like hundreds, hopefully millions of people, you could just hear them say, I love you. And they don't want anything from you. It's just, you give one love in, but you can get millions back. You know what I mean? That's the investment.
It's amazing. And so let's talk about the Love Bank website just for a little bit, or the app. So talk about the process of how it works.
So when you can go to the website and find out all about the World Love Bank. If you have a nonprofit or something a business that you want to link with me, go there, contact me. I'm looking to build partnerships all around the world. But the World Love Bank website is there for your information, and it walks you through how it works. So basically you go on, and if you're on it through your phone, you can click either button, which is the Google Play or the App Store, and it'll take you directly to the Play Store, and you can download the app. Once you download it, there's an onboarding. It'll tell you about how it works, the different accounts you get, and the way to leave intentional messages. And the first thing it asks you to do once you register, so you sign up, you put your name, your information. They do require your phone number. But as soon as you sign up, you have to say the words, I love you. And you got 3 seconds. And that's all you say. And we do go through, it's anonymous. It's not attached to your account. So it won't be like, you know, I love you from Candace. I love you from Hibby. It's just, I love you. And you just wait, you say it clearly, you can listen, say it again. So it gets you right in that moment where you like, this is what it is. It's a love bank. So right away you're asked, give some love. And this is your anonymous first deposit to the bank. And once you do that, it's accepted. We get it on our end, and it goes through voice recognition. So just in case someone might be misguided, it's only going to be love, no other words. And then what happens is the bank opens up, you get your accounts, it's on your phone, and you go to your joint account. And right away you can see the deposits from around the world. You can listen to a 2-minute compilation of I Love Yous from anonymous people from all around the world. And then you should have the top five countries. So when people deposit, they do write their country that they're in. And then we have the top five countries that have love. And once we build those banks, we then create compilations so that, for example, my husband's Australian. He would be able to listen. If their bank was filled, I'd be able to create compilations of Australian, I love you, I love you, I love you, in an Aussie accent. So if he's ever, you know, missing his family or missing his homeland, he can click and listen. And as well, you get the opportunity to go through different countries and see who's got the most love in the bank. And that's just your joint account. So nobody's bankrupt anymore, but it's anonymous. So it's just your way to get filled with some love. And then you have a check-in account. So checking, where you check in your emotions. So there's emojis, you check in how you're feeling for the day, it tracks it in your profile. And then that's where we also have words of encouragement. So another thing is sometimes people feel like they can't make a difference in this world because it costs, like they don't have enough, they can't afford to like donate large sums or they don't have the time. So in the checking account, it's where the transactions happen. So you can deposit anonymous phrases. So we have different sections for anonymous phrases and you record those. It goes into the bank, into a different section. And then we turn around and we make meditations out of those. So words of encouragement.
That's awesome. So are the words prompted or can you say whatever you want?
No, those words are prompted. That helps us to be able to monitor and use voice recognition for all the phrases as well.
And can you use the app in different languages? Like if you're French Canadian, can you leave the je t'aime instead of I love you?
No, not in the joint accounts where they're anonymous, because it just helps us with what we're achieving now to keep everyone on the same playing field.
So however, basically your English, what's what I'm looking for? English. You're an English speaking snob. That's what you're saying. You're not going to allow other language. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just teasing you.
You're hurting me. Excuse me. I think English is a worldwide language.
It is.
However, that's why you have your savings account, because I can go and send you and I love you. You're going to get a little text message that says, hey, I've received love from Candace at the World Love Bank. I'm like, what's that? Click on it and then be able to enter and listen to it. And you can say it in whatever language you want, because then I can listen to it and then put it in my account.
So how do you connect with people on the app?
So the app, you can't connect with people on the app. It's basically as if you were in a bank and you were to do an e-transfer, you'd want to enter the person's information, right? Who their email or their phone number. So in the app, what happens is it draws from your contact list. So there's a plus button. This is very important for people. There's a plus button in the middle. So you hit the plus and then it says your contacts. You choose your contact and then you type in what the message is going to be. And then you hit record and then it will go to their phone.
Do they need the app to hear the message?
They do.
Okay. And the app is free.
The app is free.
How do you make money then?
The app is free because I believe anyone should be able to have a safe place to save their love. However, I also believe that its audio is the most important. But if you wanted to leave video, then you have to upgrade to a pro account, right? So the features that we have upgraded are if you want to leave longer messages, you need to have the upgraded version. If you want to leave video messages, you need the upgraded version. There's also two other features, which is leaving a legacy. So it's a legacy account where you leave messages for yourself. So you could build your own legacy account, leaving like messages for yourself for the future, messages of how you're doing today and kind of track yourself and love yourself. And then, there's the milestone one. And I think we talked about that before. So you can actually choose a date and send that message that you recorded to someone for the future release.
So if you send, because as a business coach, I'm thinking about all sorts of ways that I can use this to love on my clients, right? So okay. if you record a message for somebody and they don't have the app, they'll be prompted to download the app when they receive the message.
Yes.
Okay. And videos, do you have to have the upgraded version of the app to watch the video that somebody else sent you?
No. So you do have to have the account, but once you have the account, you do get to see the video that someone sent. Oh, and there's one more thing. With the upgraded version, you get storage space. So we give you enough storage space to save the love of those you care about most. But because it's audio only. And as you should know, and as you do know, I'm sure, audio, you can save a lot more in a smaller amount of space. But once we start saving videos, recording videos, you're going to need more space. And that's what happens when you join and have an upgraded version. You have more space.
That's the thing about YouTube. It just is mind-blowing. It's free to put your videos out on YouTube. And you could have like a 4-hour video and you don't have to pay to store it. Because video is... takes up a lot of space.
It does. And you know, I think that that's really what people should do is like, you know, utilize the bigger features, tell your stories. My son wants me to record all his bedtime stories in there. Cause
what a great idea.
Oh, I would love to just get like, I'm going to start a YouTube channel where I just give people different ideas. Like, hey, day one, this is a great idea for you to do, because he said, mom, and this is the interesting thing is because I've built this app and I've had a lot of, talks with my family about how beneficial it is. My children have become more secure in the world because should something happen to me, they know that they're going to grieve. That's 100%. But they also know that I've provided them a part of me that they can reach out to at any time. And because we've talked about it, they feel safe. So he's like, I want my kids to be able to hear you, the stories that you've told me in your voice. And I'm like, because I might not be here.
Can you imagine? Because I'm a genealogy nerd. I love family history. And I really wish that I had recorded my grandfather and my grandmother telling me stories about their childhood because, mm-hmm. I have a vivid memory of sitting in my grandparents had a hallway/staircase. All right. So it connected the upper and lower floor, but it also connected the inside of the house with the outside of the house. And my grandfather and I was sitting in the stairwell or standing in the stairwell. And he was telling me about the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic and about how, cause I had asked him, how come we don't have any other family members? How come it's just our family? Where are all the other Nesbitts? And he said, I think they all died in the pandemic, but he was like 6 years old. And he said that he remembers his mom being on the phone and that cousin Clara had died. And he's 6 years old. So he, this is a really foggy memory for him. And I really wish that I'd had that on video or audio so that I could go back and hear it again, because I found Clara. I found Clara on ancestry.com. I found her and she died in 1918. I found her. And I wish that I had the whole story, not just my memory of being in the hallway talking to my grandfather, but I wish I had the whole thing, right? Because there's Clara and there's the proof. There's all the other Nesbitts that died in the Spanish flu. You know, it's just, and I'm the only one who was there for that story. I'm the only one who heard that story. So
A legacy. It's a legacy that we want to save. And that's like, those are precious. Those are things that you can't get back. And if someone said, hey, if I were to give you like, if I had that, if I could just take that and you could access it, would it be valuable to you? Would you wish that you had saved it? It's like, of course. So that's why I want people to be intentional. It's like, think of everything and anything and stories, because those are priceless. Those can't be replaced.
Well, I don't think my mom knew when she was making those silly little videos, how priceless they were.
How important they would be for you.
They're not just priceless to me. They're priceless to my sisters, mm-hmm. right? Because I found them and I was able to share them with them. And, now we all have these tiny short little videos. She's not even talking, as she's just making faces and doing the things that she would have done, but they're there for us when we need them. and we could share them. So that's exactly what I love. That's what I love about the Love Bank is that you can share those little snippets.
And the cool thing as well is easy access is really important. When you think about things like that and you think, okay, I've got messages and I've got memories on my phone, but if I lose my phone, they're gone. If my house burns down, everything I've saved in the cloud, well, not in the cloud, everything I've saved in like files or on my computer, gone, right? And then if they are saved in the cloud, they're mixed in with my business things. They're mixed in with, you know, the school schedule from the, you know, the last 10 years, like things that we just, you know, how many of us are so prone to not delete anything? So we've just got this, you know, massive database of things all mixed in. And so when somebody passes and you're actually grieving and you want to hear them again, you can't find the I love you if they said I love you. You can't find those messages, and those messages are really random. But if you had a bank that just had those messages, it was like, these messages are for my intentional stuff. These are the things that I don't want to lose. I've got them in the cloud. I've got them in storage, and in your savings account, you can have little folders like legacy, mom's best recipes, like go into the kitchen and this is a good tip. Go into the kitchen and video record your mom making your favorite dish, because moms always, back in the day, they never followed a recipe. It was like a pinch of this and a this and that. And I can't make my mom's dinners the way she did. They just never taste the same because she did it with love as well as I do, but she didn't write down every single ingredient. But if you could have like a storage of like all these different, like my favorite dinner, you know, by mom, and then you could just go in and watch her cook, and you could put it up and you could cook with her. You know what I mean? She wouldn't be gone.
I love
and
that.
Taste the same.
And what's crazy is that, so my mom was Korean, and she used to make this dish that we called hot meat, which was like a beef stew, a spicy beef stew. And I was telling my cousin Tara about it. And my cousin Tara was like, oh, Grandma Sue taught me how to make that. And then she described the dish to me, and it was nothing at all the way like my mother would make it. It was the same premise. Yeah. It wasn't even the same. So even, I mean, wouldn't that be fun to have that video? Like, I remember my grandma coming to visit, and we were making typical, I mean, have you ever had Korean food? It's a lot of vegetables that are pickled. So we're making the typical, you know, spread of side dish pickles. And my grandma would taste each one and go, you need to add sugar. Taste another one, you need to add sugar. And we never put sugar in any of it.
Right.
You know, so it's just that would have been fun to have on video. Just that little, you know, Grandma Sue likes to put a little sugar in
her food. Oh my gosh, 100%. And then, you know, not just, you know, like you just get to know that it's there, but yeah, to watch them. Oh, what joy. Because my mom is actually from Cape Town as well. I was born there. She's from District 6. And she used to tell stories.
Explain that, what that means for people who don't know.
So District 6 was a community in Cape Town that was a mixture of all different cultures. So the
South Africa.
In Cape Town. So what happened is when the government took over and they did the apartheid, and so people were, you know, the segregated. At first, what they did is the whites, the Caucasians got all the land, and everyone else got pushed into this small little community, just right under Table Mountain, called District 6. And so you had all these different cultures just blending. So South African food is very infused with like Malaysian food and Indian food. But we had Indians, we had Asians, we had Jewish people. Like there's just a mixture of, and the blacks all in this community. So the cultures were just, they all got along. I think that's why my mom had her attitude about like, we're all the same. But then what happened is, I think the government started feeling that there was going to be an uprising, which there was. And they decided to split everybody up. So they took all the blacks, they put them out into one section of, you know, the community, like, you know, like, and then they tried to bulldoze down District 6. And it was vibrant. It had, you know, and Cape Town was westernized. So I look at pictures back from 1940 and 1950. My mom was wearing like, her and her father and her family were, they were all seamstresses. So she was wearing some great outfits. And, you know, it's just like, wow, I would never have known that, but I wanted the stories to go along with it. And you'll never get enough. You'll never get enough. So just start being intentional now. Say what you think.
Well, the history of South Africa, I mean, there's probably a lot of secrets in your family, because they had to be secrets because they didn't want the government to know about them.
Well, that's why we ended up moving here, is because my brother was, he was being called out of school because he always spoke up against the government, and they're like, he's going to get you in trouble. And my parents didn't want anything to happen to him. So that's why we ended up moving. But I do remember going back. I remember going back in 1982, 84. The apartheid was still happening, and I grew up in Canada. So I remember going there and being really confused when I walked to the store and it said whites only. And I was, you know, it just didn't make sense to me because I was growing up in Canada, but that's what it was like there.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know,
that wasn't very long ago. I mean,
no, it happened. I think the apartheid changed in 1994.
Do you know when it started?
Okay.
No.
Nope.
You know what? I'm really a history buff. So if you check the show notes, episode 127, gratitudegeek.com, episode 127, I'm going to have a link to the history of apartheid in South Africa in the show notes.
Please do. I'll read them as well.
We, in my senior year of high school, we had a foreign exchange student who was from South Africa, and it was a really big deal because South Africa wasn't involved in the normal student exchange program that we had because of the apartheid thing. It was 1988.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I cannot remember. Kate, was her name Kate? It was Kate. And she had come over through a different program that wasn't the normal foreign exchange student program that all the other students had come through. And she was white and she was great. She went to prom with a black guy. And she was really, really sweet. And we were pen pals. We'd write letters. I mean, this is the 80s and early 90s. There was no internet, right? So we would write letters to each other. And then all of a sudden, I stopped getting letters from her. And then I got one about a year later saying that, because apartheid ended. And I got one saying our family had to flee South Africa. We're living in England now. And then I never heard from her again.
Wow.
And what did that mean? Why did a white family have to flee South Africa?
Well, and this is the thing too, is that I think when there's an uprising and that, you know, the balances change, right? Like, and my mom said, you know, there were so many Caucasian wonderful people in South Africa too. So many that got grouped into this, hey, you know, they are bigoted or racial, or you know what I mean, and they weren't. But when I think when the government changed, it was like they took everything from one side to give it to the other, regardless if the other was prepared to handle it, trained, educated to do it. And then those other people were angry, as they should have been at some point, but not, I don't think angry is the right word. But it was all turned. And so I think that it was like, well, let's give them a taste of their own medicine. And that was completely wrong. And I think, you know, people had to leave.
So I'm listening to a book right now called A Gentleman in Moscow. And it's about a man who was a duke or a count or something before the revolution, before the Russian Revolution. And then after the Russian Revolution, he was allowed to live, but he could not leave the hotel where he lived. And if he left the hotel where he lived, he'd be shot. Now, I haven't finished the book yet, so so I don't know how it ends. But I think it's kind of probably the same thing. I mean, there's such an upheaval, and so he runs into a prince. You know, a former prince comes into the hotel, and they catch up, and then the prince goes back home to his home that he's lived in his entire life, and he now shares that home with a dozen or so other people who are all living in different rooms in this house, because that's what they did after the revolution. Is anybody who was rich, they gave your house away. You could still live there, but you could only have one room. Other people moved into your house, and that's just something that happened after the Russian. This is true. This is true history.
Okay. Thank you.
So it was just really, it was just a really interesting. But this to me, that sounds a lot to me like what happened in South Africa, was that the shift. happened so dramatically and so drastically that you when you went from being wealthy to being, you know, poor overnight. I mean, I don't think the prince was poor, but you know, he lost the sole domain of his home. And I say it happens if you don't do things gradually, right? Do things gradually.
And I think, you know, and I think that's the thing, is like they took from one to give to the other. And by all means, you know, I wouldn't want to be quoted on all this information, because sometimes we get stories that are, you know, impressed upon our parents, and then they, return, give them to us. And whether or not 100% of it is true or not, we don't know. We just get that version. And exactly. I'm not well-versed in it, but I do know that, you know, South Africa is just one of many places. I mean, you know, that's the whole thing, is that, you know, right now there's a war going on in the Ukraine. You know what I mean? Like there's, those things are happening. There's, you know, the shootings, there's always different shifts people are going through. Sometimes it's shifts as like as a community or a country. And sometimes it just shifts as a family.
Well, right now, today, there are people in the United States who believe one thing is true. And there are other people who believe that the exact opposite of that same thing is true. Well, both of the things can't be true. One of them isn't true. And neither side is willing to admit that they're the wrong ones that are wrong. I'm trying to say that without being too political.
But you know, there it is again, it's true for them based on what they were impressed upon as a child.
So a particular group of people have been lied to.
Okay.
And they believe the lie. got political. Yeah.
But okay, let's not get political, but I'm just saying that the fact is, if you believe something, it's different than if you, to shift someone's belief is a very hard thing to do.
You can't force people
to choose. Oh, no, it's okay. I was just going to say, you can't, like, beliefs are something that, you know, if they believe it, then it is their truth, right? So how do we learn to shift people's beliefs in a way? Because you don't want to, if you want someone to believe something that you believe, because you believe it's true, and they believe theirs is true, it's like showing them the way of the wise is, you can't force someone to believe what you believe, because you know they'll just, you push, they push back, right? It's like, how, this is a question, how do we get people to want to believe what we believe
I don't know if but you can start with leaving love in the love bank.
You know what? 100%, 100% you could start with leaving love in the love bank, because this one thing that I want to say is that because it's anonymous, if you're willing to love you and you want to listen to love, you don't have an opportunity to hear and see that person's voice, you know, and judge them, because it's just their voice. So you can't judge their age. You can't judge their culture. You can't judge what you might perceive as their wealth or lack thereof. Like, you're just going to hear the voice of, I love you. And even if it's in an accent, you don't know if that person, what color that person is. We know the world, you know, we transferred to live in all these different countries. You have to just accept love for love. It's, you know, it's a straight up exchange. It's love for love. And with that, if people, and when people start to embrace this idea and listen, and you know, they will hear I love you from all different cultures, from all different accents, from different sounding ages, and they can just, but how is that voice coming in? It's coming with love. That's what mm-hmm. we need. It's come, you know, so it's like, yeah, maybe it can impress upon people, right?
Mm-hmm. So I have a friend who's Muslim, and he is just an amazing person, very kind heart, one of the kindest people I know. And he's a Toastmaster. We met through Toastmasters. And after a Toastmasters meeting, another man came up to him and said, you are one of the best Christians I know. And his response was, that's really interesting because I'm Muslim. And that right there is the very definition of being a decent human. It doesn't matter what your religion is. If you're a decent human, you're a decent human, and other people will see you through their lens.
Well, my mother grew up Christian because they had the missionaries in District 6, and my father was Muslim. So, you know, and my sister now is Jewish. And so, but if you study a bit about religion, they all talk about the same God.
They're all children of Abraham.
Mm-hmm. All exactly. And then, you know, then you've got the other more spiritual religions that have more gods, but go again up higher. They all talk about love. They all talk about acceptance. They
there
all talk
some
about
common
this
themes. There's common themes in religion. Do unto others as you'd have done unto you.
Yeah.
There's a flood in most major religions. There's some sort of flood experience. I don't know what that's about, you know, but all religions have a common theme, and that's just be decent humans to each other. Right. Just
And I think there's one that my mom used to say is don't judge others lest you be judged yourself. And I don't think it's about someone on the outside judging you, but for example, if you were to judge other people, it's not you have then taken on that characteristic of being a judgmental type of person. Therefore, what we believe is that people treat us the way we want it. You know, we treat them one way and they'll treat us the same. So if I'm judging people and I'm always in that character and behavior, I've got to look at all those people and think they must be judging me too.
Exactly.
And then on top of that, if other people are judging me, how am I judging me? So judging others lest you be judged yourself is that, remember I told you that parallel universe, what you give out comes back. So it's that if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything.
Yeah, that's the law of reciprocity. And so what you're doing with the World Love Bank is exactly what the law of reciprocity is not designed for, but it's the perfect use of the law of reciprocity, because you keep putting love into the world. You're putting love into the world. You're adding love to the bank and you're going to love back. Who knows where it comes from, but you're depositing that love in that bank. And the more love you deposit in that bank, the more love you're going to feel. Such a great idea. All right. We need to wrap up. Oh my gosh. I could talk to you forever. I wanted to tell you something. I can't remember what it was. Oh, I was going
to
just,
it'll come to you.
I was going to make a comment because my mother is Korean and my father's family has been in the United States since the 1600s. So since before it was the United States. So, and his heritage is Italian, Irish, and Scottish, in English. And my grandfather actually grew up in a house that spoke Italian. And then my mom is 100% Korean, who was born in Beijing when Japan was occupying Korea. So there's a lot of cultures going on there.
What
there's
a great story. There's just
a lot of cultures going on there. The occupation of Korea by Japan was not a great story.
No, but I'm just thinking of, were saying, like my, you know, Irish and like, you know, the mixture of the Italian and then to have that. And then with this, you know, pure, beautiful, like Korean culture, and then just to have that, you know, infused and like excited, like I'm getting goosebumps.
See, for me, I always thought that I was really unique. And then I met you. Your story is phenomenal. Your mother was part Bush. Your father is Muslim. Yeah, I mean, your story is just as amazing. And you're in Canada. I mean, that is the beauty of, I think that's the beauty of North America. And I don't care if you live in Canada, the United States, or Mexico, there are no full-blooded anybodies here. You know,
there are, especially full-blooded humans.
Exactly. Full-blooded humans. Exactly. The full-blooded human. And that is the beauty of North America that you don't get anywhere else. And you're going to, people might argue and say, oh, Mexicans are Mexican. No, that country was owned by Germany and Spain and go on and on and on and yada, yada. There are no full-blooded Mexicans, if you want to call them Mexicans, right? It's just a big old melting pot. Some people have brown hair, some people have blonde hair, but we are all a big melting pot of different cultures. And that's what makes North America so beautiful.
100%. Like my cousins on my father's side have stunning blue eyes because the Saudi Arabians, the Arabic, love to marry the blue-eyed blondes. And it would skip a generation. I'd be like, oh, love those eyes. I wish I had them. Right. But we all get what we get. And I think that that's a practice we have to have in this world, is really what you said. Like North, we are a melting pot, but you know, if you think about it, it's just one world. And so what if there are different cultures? Like, let's embrace them. Let's, when we go there, look with open, like be open, willing, and honest to be like, hey, we are different, but we are all the same. Mm-hmm. And I want to learn from you and whatever you could teach me, because, you know, we're not everyone's going to know the best way to make, you know, that Korean dish. And when you, what you make here, if you go to Korea, oh, completely different.
Yeah, you don't even get the same ingredients. It's so funny when I watch Korean cooking shows for the, where they're in Korea.
They have like, the best desserts, by the way, desserts.
But you're like, okay, that is not a carrot. It's like this big. That's a rat.
Oh, I see those. I mean, what is with that? Like, I mean, how, like, it's crazy.
And green onion, the green onions are ginormous, and they're not, what's that other thing that's long and skinny, that's long and green?
Asparagus?
And not asparagus. Chives? It's like an onion, but it's not chives. It's the big fat one. The big fat thing that looks like a green onion. Well, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Yeah. It's just different. I mean, but I had a girlfriend in Texas who was from South Africa, and she used to talk about how you can't get the same kinds of fruits and vegetables in the United States as you could get in South Africa. And then
climates, everything.
Yeah. So, but the world is so cool, you know, and people adapt. So we've learned how to make Korean recipes, and we've learned how to make Arabic recipes, and we've learned how to make, you know, South African recipes with North American ingredients. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact is we make them and we enjoy them, and you know, it's the intention, right? It's the intention that we're trying new things.
Yeah. All right. So is there anything that you would like to talk about that I haven't asked you or that you haven't had an opportunity to talk about yet?
No, I think, you know what, this last hour has been absolutely fantastic. So thank you. It's just been a nice flow. It's like, this is what the World Love Bank is, but this is how humans talk to each other. People that just meet. It's like there, we have commonalities. We have, you know, gifts that we want to share. We all have our stories. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important, people to know that being individual is okay. And, you know, and that showing up as your authentic self is the main thing, because if you can love yourself, you can love others. Mm-hmm. And if you can't love yourself, practice receiving love so that you can learn to love yourself and then others.
And your app is a good way to practice receiving love. I love the whole concept. Love the whole
thing. I want everyone who's listening to visit the website, check it out. It is, like I said, It is free to use. Start being intentional. Today is the best day to save love.
Exactly. So it's worldlovebank.com. When you get there, you're going to be asked to say something. I can't remember what it was now. You're going to be asked to say something so that you can download the app. You're going to be asked to deposit. What was it that I had to say when I made my first deposit?
You can do a deposit on the website, but you can also just go straight and download the app and deposit the I love you straight to the app.
Oh, okay.
But you did. You did before you download the app, you went into the Love Bank and you deposited a booster for us. A little bit of words of encouragement.
That's what I
you
did.
You can do this. I don't know which one you chose.
And if your AI kicks it out, and it's because you're laughing at the end of it.
I was.
It was so much fun. So worldlovebank.com, or you can go directly to the App Store or the I don't even know what the Apple, what's the Apple Store called?
Google Play, App Store, or Google Play.
Now is my favorite part of the interview. It's your opportunity to share your moment of gratitude. For whom or what are you most grateful?
Right now, I would say I'm most grateful for you, Candace. Thank you so much for your energy, your day, your time, your love, your passion. Everything today is perfect. And I'm so grateful that I got to spend this time with you.
Thanks for joining us this week for Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast, helping micropreneurs find your micro influencer magic. Your time is valuable, and I am ever so grateful that you chose to spend your time with us today. Be sure to check the show notes at gratitudegeek.com, episode 127, for links to all the groovy resources mentioned today, and of course, to connect with World Love Bank and Hibby Bartlett. And while you're there, why not subscribe to the show on Audible, iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Our theme music is track 14 by Rev Rock and Silverly. I've been your host, Candace Rigardi. Join me on my mission to spread gratitude, sow seeds of appreciation, and harvest a bounty of generosity and kindness. Stay groovy, my friends.
Stay groovy, my friends.